It's time at Talk Zone for more world-changing leadership with Our Global Hope. Here again, your host, Dr. Henrik Mann.
We're back with our guest, Ms. Amy Cole, successful business broker in the San Francisco Bay Area and leader in the business brokerage industry nationally. I want to remind our listeners that they can email me at hman@gencomintl and learn more about our show at www.ourglobalhope.com. In our first segment, we were talking about Amy's background and the context of the work that she does as a successful business broker. And Amy, I'm wondering if you can describe for our listeners the difference between mergers and acquisitions. That seems like a fine line.
Well, mergers and acquisitions is really more become a general term that we refer to when a company is either purchasing another company or acquiring them.
Sure, and yet sometimes those dynamics are one where the power is such that one company is just a lot bigger than the other, and that seems to be more of an acquisition.
Yes.
And in some cases, the politics dictate that it be called a merger, but really when all the dust settles, one company really took over another.
Correct. Mm-hmm. It's all in the deal structure, how it's structured.
Do you feel like many times there's some big egos that are involved when the merger and acquisition process is taking place?
Number one involvement with a deal is working with both sides and their egos.
Mm-hmm. Henrik, I want to jump in here and help everyone understand that when you've been an entrepreneur or you've been a leader of an organization and a merger or acquisition is taking place, a whole part of you is morphing. And no matter how objective, no matter how wonderful, no matter how even cost-effective it becomes for shareholders or yourself, that is the biggest strength or impediment of any situation.
Well, Amy, I'm thinking that there's definitely a process of business valuation that you go through. And I'm wondering if you could take our listeners through that just a little bit to help them understand that it's not that coming up with a number that works for both sides is really based on an awful lot of work in the trenches and expertise on your part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's one of, when I talked about the process, we sort of have a four-part process, and one is the pre-planning that goes into selling a business. The second is, you know, how we search for buyers and how we market. The third is really in the deal making. And then the fourth is in the closing and the transition. But in the planning stage, one of the very first things that we do is we do a business valuation and assessment to look at what is the current state of the business. What do we think we could get for the business on market? Sometimes we'll appraise it in-house to do a broker's value of opinion, and oftentimes we are required to use a certified and accredited third-party appraiser who has the credentials to fully analyze all of the assets and goodwill and phantom assets of the business. Typically, there's three approaches that are used, a cost of assets approach, so what are the real assets in the business, the income and the earnings. So this includes the appraiser looking at the financials, and we do what's called recasting or normalizing them. So we look at the earnings and we help trend out. And really what we want to find out is what cash flow is being thrown off of the business. Every buyer wants to know, what am I going to earn from running this business and what's the potential? What's historical and what's the potential? And then the third approach is really the market, and we look at comparable sales. What have other businesses in this industry sold for, and it's a very good indicator of what it's worth. And so whenever we sit down with an owner and start to look at what is their exit strategy, the number one thing is helping them get a realistic value, because so many owners or business people hear or read somewhere, oh, my business is worth 7x EBITDA or it's worth this. They think in their mind, and my business is greater than that, so it's worth so much more. And part of the first challenge that we have to overcome is helping the owner understand the realistic value of what we think we can get for them at market. And so that's really the first step.
Charlie, when you think about business valuation and how that connects to the psychic identity of the owner and of the potential buyer. What are some of the things that you come up with in your mind that that go into that from the human side of the equation?
Well, let me add a little history as well as psychology to this. You know, in the late 80s and all through the 90s until the adjustment of the dot-com world, people began to try to put a value on employees, on ideas. VCs were throwing money at a good idea. And we've had a kind of a serious readjustment the last 8 or 9 years as people realize you actually have to have a product at the end. So I think part of it is the challenge of the idea person or entrepreneur not having too big an ego, but to ask the question of what kind of value in terms of product, service, insight does the end user have, and how do we quantify that? On the human level, there have been enough stories of ideas helping people to strike it rich that it's sometimes very humbling and challenging for the business owner to realize that the value may not be there the way they wanted it to be, and there's going to be some more sweat involved.
Amy, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of the factors, or at least identify a few of the factors that lead to a failure in the M&A process. I know your business is looking for successes and building for those successes, but I imagine there's every once in a while at least a failure in the M&A process where you're not able to come to help the clients come to terms, and or there's implications that come out of it that somehow it just goes sour. And that must be a fear in the process for some of the owners and some of the buyers.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me sort of first make a comment just about some general statistics. So generally, there is a statistic that says only 20% of businesses that are listed or for sale sell. That's a very, very low number. And there's many factors, you know, for that. And that includes all the small businesses out there. Brokerage firms tend to have a higher statistic, maybe, you know, 50 to 70%. And we as a team sit on that very high range of that because we have a tried and tested process that we go through. But the truth is, not every business sells. You know, you could say there's a buyer for every business, but it all involves timing. It might take you 9 to 12 months to find that buyer for a smaller business. For a larger business, it might take 18 to 24 months. And so, you know, there is marketing is key in terms of getting that business in front of the most strategic and the largest group of buyers. But to go back and answer your question in terms of what causes a business not to sell, you know, we can look at that from both sides of the coin. There's top reasons why a business can sell and top reasons that it maybe wouldn't. But there's sort of five things that we recommend or we tell owners that are really key, and I'll just walk through them. First of all is that their financials really need to be in great condition. They need to keep good records of their cash flow, their expenses, because when a buyer comes in to do due diligence, they want to be able to, you know, trust what's there, and that will certainly facilitate a good deal. There needs to be a strong management team in place. One of the big challenges with a small business is if it's all about the owner. If it's all about Mr. Owner going out and bringing in the revenue and doing the sales, and that is a really key person, a buyer is going to see that as a risk. And the more risk, the less likely it is to sell. Product and customer diversity is the third thing that's really critical. There needs to be a variety of products that can be recession-proof, as we've, you know, seen in the last year and a half, and also customer diversity. Any sale or transaction that relies more than 20% for their revenue shows the buyer a higher risk. And also innovation and marketing. You know, the company needs a website. It needs a way to grow their business. They need to be striving for growth and be able to show that they can grow. And then what I really believe is to hire the right person to represent them. And that would be a broker, an intermediary, and that person is going to put together a strong deal team for that owner. So they need to have access to a good transactional attorney, a tax accountant, a good insurance person, a good wealth management person to help them after they transition. So the right deal team is always also very helpful in a successful deal.
Charlie, quick follow-up?
Well, quick follow-up. Her most important word there was team. And I think often people in these situations that are ready to make this transition don't realize the complexity. And that's why her services are so important. And we have to have the humility to share some of the resource with those who are going to help us manage it well.
Charlie, I can't help but think that there have been, just as you were pointing out, a history of different kinds of mergers. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts as we go into the preparation for our next segment about how we can position this issue of leadership in the midst of M&A.
Well, you know, a couple thoughts that immediately come to my mind is clarity, integrity, focus, relevance. These kinds of words take on real meaning, and timing. You know, the wrong product at the wrong time, you know, yields the difficulties that we've been talking about. So there has to be some real serious work at a little bit of future perspective behind everything that goes on. And I think the other thing that is important, and again, Amy has just pointed to this so expertly, is are the number of counselors, as it were, the wisdom in many counselors, as the ancient prophet said, becomes very important. We're not going to be able to go forward in business as a lone ranger.
Well, as we go into our second break, I want to again remind our listeners that our listener call-in line is 1-888-463-6748. That's 1-888-GO-FOR-IT. And that you can learn more about our show at www.ourglobalhope.com. We'll be right back with Amy Cole for more world-changing leadership talk.